Welcome, family. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of Ascension Radio. This is the Jaguar Shaman. You're tuning into episode 21. This is going to be a very special episode. I have two guests with me who both have extensive experience in both the scholarly and the practitioner aspects of psychedelics and sacred medicines. With me, I have Tangela and I have Jade. They're both two wonderful people that I met on Twitter. And, you know, all about these. And I felt that considering I had spoken, you know, a couple of weeks ago about, you know, spiritual medicine and psychedelics and the benefits and some of the issues that arise when using those things, I felt that it was definitely necessary for me to get an episode up, you know, kind of speaking about these sacred teachers. And who better to do that than, you know, these two young women who I respect very much with their knowledge, and I know I can definitely trade information with on a regular. So Tangela, if you can start, please, and just kind of introduce yourself a little bit, give a little bit of a brief description of, you know, what it is that you know about these things, how it is that you've come across this path. And then Jade, you can do the same as soon as Tangela's done.
Okay, yeah, for sure. So I've been practicing my own craft with these medicines for about 10 years now. I learned how to make Aya and DMT in my early 20s and have practiced them ceremoniously ever since that. I've also had a lot of ceremonies with mushrooms and other lesser known derivatives of psychedelics. So yeah,
awesome.
I hold a lot of regard for them.
As we should. Okay, and Jade, how about you?
Jade? Can you guys hear me at all?
Yeah, I can hear you now. What's up?
Okay, I'm having a bad connection. I'm trying to jump to a new one right now, but am I coming through steady?
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
Okay, cool. So I'm Jabe. I'm an audio engineer, but I have a degree in neuroscience and linguistics. I recently was, like you said, kind of inducted into an ayahuasca lineage in Peru. Before that, I mean, ever since I was a kid, I was really interested in altered states in general. Always asking my parents questions about it and, like, what does it feel like? From everything from what does it feel like to be drunk to, like, well, how would there be a Jimi Hendrix if there was no acid, you know? So definitely my curiosity, like, preceded any, like, experimenting or anything like that. But I don't know, like... I think that consciousness expansion is kind of the secret to ending like the bad decision making of humanity, and especially when it comes to master teacher plants such as psilocybin and ayahuasca. It's like those are the types of plants that allow you to hear and feel the spirits of other plants, which is like what's really, really critical for us. Like turning the ship around regarding the way that we, our relationship with the earth and our relationship with each other, which are essentially the same because we literally are the same.
Yeah, agreed. I agree. They're definitely agreed. Here for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you both touched on good points. I mean, you both kind of referred to them as master teachers, these master plants. And I think that, you know, the shamans of old times would not have disagreed with you guys at all. You know, they had a very much powerful ritualistic approach to kind of harnessing the knowledge or the sacred knowledge that these plants could, you know, kind of reveal. And Jade, I think it's a very interesting point that you made about, you know, consciousness expansion. And, you know, I think that that was one of the points that I was trying to make when I went on Twitter speaking about how, you know, the misuse of spiritual psychedelics could lead, you know, to somebody depending on that for just the you know, that feeling of consciousness expansion. And I think that it was misinterpreted on, you know, on some people's parts where they believe that I was saying that these plants shouldn't be used. I don't agree with that at all. I think that these plants are master teachers. There are literal shaman societies that relied heavily on the ayahuasca and the psychoclobin plant because, you know, they understood that there was certain states that these plants would be able to get them into, that they could, like you said, communicate with other plants. see things that perhaps hadn't happened yet. You know, I know a lot of shamans used to enter into these states to answer questions that were brought to them by their tribes, that the answer wouldn't normally be there, or it wouldn't be as accessible as it was under these states of expanded consciousness. And even to just drive that point home, I always speak about Carlos Castaneda's, you know, kind of series with Don Juan, and the whole entire apprenticeship that he had, Carlos Castaneda had with Don Juan, was literally to learn how to use master plants such as peyote, such as ayahuasca. Peyote was also known as mezcalito at the time, to really enter these states of awareness so that they could see the world differently. And then when they return to it, be able to use that view to continue their work.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense to me.
Awesome. Awesome. So, you know, really quickly, I want to just, you know, dive right into kind of the nitty gritty of it. So in terms of kind of in your own experiences, could you please give the listeners, and then Jade, you can start this time first, and then Tanjula, you can go right after Jade's done. In terms of your own experience.
Oh, just so you know, my name is Jade with a B.
With a B.
Just so you know.
Hey.
Yeah.
Okay, Jade. Babe. Excuse me, my bad.
Yeah, super weird.
No, I like it. I like unique names like that, trust me. So yeah, Jade, you could go first, and then just kind of explain what it is that you felt after doing maybe Aya for your first time, or whichever one you want to speak on, and then kind of explain, you know, what it was that you saw as this expansion of consciousness, how it was that you maybe saw the world a little bit differently or very differently.
Wow, yeah, I love that question. I actually think it's hard for me to think of which moment is most impactful. I think probably the time that I did my first heroic dose of mushrooms kind of broke me into the idea of understanding the life and death process for the first time. And this is before I had really understood ayahuasca on any level at all. I mean, I'd heard the name of it. I knew it was really intense, and I heard you saw aliens. That was like pretty much all I knew about it at that point. But I did have an experience where I had a vasovagal episode while I was on a very high dose of mushrooms. So that just means like all the blood kind of through there. Blood vessels, because they'll dilate and it will correct itself because you pass out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But every time I stood up, this would happen again. So,
oh my God.
The initial thing happened. I was kind of like by I thought I was going to get sick. So I was like in the bathroom and I was leaned up. And in that time where I was leaned up against the wall and, you know, all the blood had dropped out of my brain, I definitely had this experience of the self outside of the egoic self. And I had that experience of losing the internal narration in my head that just sort of keeps a like little running reel of like what's going on around you and just talking forever. And there was this sense of a line that you could cross if you wanted to die and not cross if you didn't want to die. But it wasn't even that like verbal or linguistic or spelled out. It was like just a very vague sense, etheric movement kind of thing. And I didn't know enough about psychedelics to understand that went the way it was supposed to go. So it was very interesting to me, because when I later found ayahuasca, much, much later, probably 5 years later, you know, I went into it very, I wouldn't say afraid, but the term that's coming to mind is very tight butted about the whole thing. I was just like, I was really expecting to get completely obliterated. And, you know, I was accepting of that. And what I got was just this like really warm motherly embrace that was like, you don't need to be punished. You didn't do anything wrong except for maybe not love yourself as much as you could. So why don't you just go ahead and dance and love yourself and sing a song and, you know, just, it was so easy and happy. And I was like, oh, this is what Aya is. It's just, if you come in with a pure, full heart, like that's how it is. Oh, no. That's not how it is. Like, the thing that is so cool about ayahuasca is you can do it hundreds of times and you can have a completely, it completely differs. I have a background in neuroscience. I understand how drugs work. it's not a fucking drug. It's really not, because the drug has a dosage and a response, and it can be predicted and measured, certainly in one individual, you know, certainly with years in between, or, you know, a complete clearing of it, whatever the case may be. But, you know, I've also completely fucking died on ayahuasca, and it wasn't a fun time while it was happening.
Right.
So it's really magical. When I did it in the jungle for the first time, it was on a totally different level than, you know, I did it one time in the States before I went down to Peru. And am I going on? I don't want to like
talk. No, definitely. You could drive the point home. We have time for both of you guys.
Okay. Yeah. Well, when I did it in Peru for the first time, it was fucking amazing, because we did it in this thing called a maloca, and it's the traditional Shipibo manner of doing it. We're with the Shipibo family. Everyone in the family is what an American would consider a shaman. They all practice plant medicines and botanicals and had very intense spiritual practices, but their standard of what a shaman is called a maestro. So they were relatives. They had relatives that were maestros, mom and dad and a son. And they came through and set up the maloca. You know, I consider all these people now primos, because they, like, even the people that weren't in ceremony with us were guarding us, or, you know, feeding us, or whatever the case may be, just like making us like their family, and asking very, very little in return. Anyway, we would lock up the maloca, and the idea is that you stay in the maloca kind of no matter what happens. There's a bathroom attached to it. You know, our primos are guarding it, because that actually became, there were safety issues that had to be addressed while we were in ceremony. We could completely focus on our spiritual journey, because the day-to-day human things have been completely attended for us. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So even though you're in the middle of the jungle and there's like plenty of things to think about, whether it's, you know, roaches or jaguars, you know, all different sizes of things, you know,
right.
At least, you know, you could think about, okay, well, I'm probably not going to get robbed right now. That's cool.
Right. And I think that, you know, just not to interrupt, but I think that it's important to note that, you know, that's why a lot of these things were done ritualistically with a large number of tribe members. You know, originally when they were done kind of within the tribes, it was to create that kind of safe space for the people that were undergoing this journey. You know, so that you said it perfectly, so that they could focus strictly on like the spiritual development aspect of the trip and not really worry about, you know, things like you said, like roaches, jaguars, or the everyday dangers that you might experience in a jungle area. Like,
yeah,
that.
And it's worth. Animals like jaguars and dolphins also will trip and you know, sacrifice a decent chunk of time of being vulnerable, physically vulnerable, that they don't have to be.
Right.
There's obviously like some sort of like evolutionarily beneficial like a benefit to this kind of practice, or animals wouldn't be doing it too, you know.
Absolutely. And that also goes to note that it is two very intelligent types of animals. You know, the jaguar is the apex predator of the forest. I mean, of the rainforest for a reason. And dolphins, we know that they, you know, that they have a very, very kind of structured way of living and stuff like that.
Yeah. The animals are why I wanted to mention, though, the first time I did the ayahuasca in the jungle, it was like we get in the maloca and everything's dark. And it's meant to be like that. There's a candle in the center while everyone gets ready, and then they blow it out and the ceremony's done in darkness. And, you know, it's really intimidating at first, because you have to, like, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to confront a lot of demons. But by the time you start feeling the medicine, it's really not dark anymore. And it's not just that your night vision has adjusted. You see a ton of bioluminescent creatures in the forest.
Yeah.
And it really gives you a sense of the depth of the forest and exactly how much depth of life there is. And the ikaros of the shamans that they'll sing will respond to certain animals. So if you sing an owl ikaros, the owls will sing back. Mm-hmm. And they'll sing back like it's their turn to sing in the song.
Right.
You know.
Ritual as well.
Yeah, no. One of the ceremonies, we were gathering a really strong jaguar energy. We literally brought them under the maloca. Like, it's, you know, each person thought that it was part of their hallucination until we, like, first we thought it was maybe a collective hallucination. We just brought heavy jaguar energy. And then I talked to my primo Lenny and he was like, no, there was a jaguar. I came with the shotgun.
Oh my God. All right. Well, you know, Jabe, definitely thank you for sharing. That sounds like a very magical experience. I can definitely see why you respect these, these master teachers, because obviously, you know, you've seen firsthand what they can do and what they can open up in people. From what you just last said, it's not just an unconscious or subconscious kind of experience or a hallucination. These are waves and energies that are radiating enough so to really kind of get all of nature to interact. So thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it. Tangela, it's your turn. Again, the same question is, you know, what is kind of what trip or what kind of journey really opened you up the most, and which one do you feel that was the most powerful using, you know, which one of these sacred teachers or which one of these plants?
Yeah, sure. So,
hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I lost the connection.
It's all good.
Yeah. So I feel like I've had a different experience because I learned how to make the medicine when I was fairly young. And so once I learned how to make it, basically I don't know, it was weird. It was honestly really weird. I just happened to fall into this group of people and met the right, you know, it was really just a matter of like being in the right place at the right time and just like really channeling my energy in the right way. And then all these things just kind of like domino affected for me. So, you know, there's the saying about shamans that they kind of like tend to just like walk off into the forest alone and then come back out as a shaman, you know, and I kind of really resonate with that because I feel like my journey was that way as well, because I was always an outcast. So, you know, I just kind of felt like I was forced to go into the jungle and just kind of do my own thing. And I literally did that, you know. So, you know, I started making the medicine, and so it just kind of became clear to me that, you know, I was supposed to hold this space for people. And I'm going to be honest, I wasn't really aware of that responsibility at first. So there was definitely times where I would hold ceremony with people and I wasn't, you know, really respecting it. And there was definitely times where I made mistakes. And but again, I think that was obviously a part of my experience so that I could learn that.
Right.
You know, there would be times that I would dose people and it was just clear that they weren't ready for it and that they weren't really, you know, actually called to the medicine. They just happened to be my friend. So I was like, yeah, try this with me, you know. And yeah, but again, that was the beginning stages of my craft, you know, and I had to learn those lessons the hard way. And but now I definitely have refined it to a point where it's like, okay, you know, this is a responsibility, you know.
Right,
I can't just squander this. This is something that has been given to me for whatever reason, and I have to own that. So for me, the experiences that I've had have been a lot, and it's just been like a journey for me. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a part of my life, you know, at this point. You know, so for me, the parallels, like, it's not any different from my real life to, you know, the life that I live on ayahuasca, right? They've come to a point where it's merged, right? So it's like,
okay. Oh, wow, yeah.
You know, like, even when I'm sober, I feel like I'm in that space, you know, like, I feel like I constantly have my ancestors walking with me. I feel like they're guiding me, you know, I can call on to them, you know, even if I'm not on the plant. Whenever I hold ceremony for people, I don't take the plant, but they will come back and they'll be like, I saw you there, like you were there, you know? And so I realized like, okay, I'm holding space for this person. I'm their guide, you know? So whatever I can do, and it's not even like to say it in an egotistical sense, it's me channeling the spirit for them so that they can have something tangible for it, you know?
Right. And I just have one quick question on something that you mentioned there that I think is important, because this was actually told to me by my teacher himself. And I think I touched on this a little bit before we started recording about how, you know, I haven't had ayahuasca up to this point yet because my teacher himself told me that I needed to wait until the medicine found me.
That's true.
And he said that it was imperative that I let it find me, because if I wasn't, I wasn't going to be ready for it, and I wasn't going to see, you know, kind of what I was supposed to, or what I could truly see when the medicine itself called me to itself.
Right.
So can you just touch base a little bit about that? Like, what's your belief about that? You know, why do you think that is? That's, you know, that the medicine sort of calls certain people. Do you think that it has to do anything with spiritual progress? Do you think that maybe it's just the individual lessons kind of being waited for?
I definitely feel like it has to do with, so all psychedelics are doing, every single one of them, all they're doing is enhancing whatever state of mind that you're in currently.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what it is you're doing. So if you're in a fucked up state of mind, psychedelics are gonna amplify that 100%, you know.
Absolutely.
So I think that's part of why, you know, when it comes to Aya, you have to make sure that, you know, it's just like when you're trying to call on to a lover, right? You have to make sure your temple is clear, right? Or else you're gonna attract the wrong kind of energy.
It's a relationship. I agree 100%.
It's a relationship, so it's like you have to clear your body, you have to clear your mind, and not even like, I don't mean clear as in like you have to delete parts of yourself, you know, it's just you have to step into that place where it's like, okay, I'm pure, you know, like,
No, totally. Emptying yourself is like the most essential shamanic practice. And like, you know, though I aspire to one day be on that path, I certainly have no practice beyond, you know, experiences with maestros. But I do know that you have to hollow yourself to these types of experiences, because you will encounter things that will shake you inevitably. It's part of the process. Like holding space for people that are losing their shit. Like, if you, like, I mean, the hardest thing in the world about being a modern shaman is the interaction with the Western world and medical system, because I would never practice in the U.S. because I would never have I don't think I have the discernment currently to know if somebody asked me to go to the hospital what to do, because I asked to go to the hospital when I was in Peru. Shit. It was a 20-minute boat ride away, and, you know, another like rickshaw ride, and then, you know, it's still a little bit dicey.
Right.
You know,
definitely a responsibility for sure.
Yeah, keeping some, I feel like the right thing to do as a shaman would be to not bring somebody to that place of non-healing. But then it's like, if that was an option and we were in the U.S., like, would I be able to stand somebody in somebody's way of that's like asking for that? Like,
Yeah. And I think that also right there highlights what it means, you know, to be ready. And I'm going to just give a brief kind of experience that I've had. I mean, I've done, you know, mushrooms. I've done DMT. And one of the things that happened with me with mushrooms, I took a very, very high dose. And similar to something that Jabe said, I really felt like I was going to die. Like, I legitimately, in my mind, like, I had died, and what I was witnessing was the afterlife. And that's just how my mind took it. That's how I saw the trip. And, you know, it's difficult because when I did that dose that first time, it was like, I know for a fact now, looking back on it, I wasn't ready for that dose. And that manifested in what I tripped and what I saw, you know. It was like, everything that could possibly go wrong within the trip was going wrong. You know, things that normally I would have looked at and been like, wow, this is beautiful, were becoming like these like monstrous apparitions. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, when I did the same dose a couple of months after that, when I wasn't in the same state that I was that initial dose, it was like the most magical experience I had ever seen. You know, aww. I mean, I literally felt like I had gone through the portal. I mean, I could see my ancestors in trees, in the wind, in everything. You know, I was having a conversation, you know, with bushes and stuff like that. And And one of the things that I had seen is that it's the reason that they say don't do it unless it comes to you is because you may not be ready for the type of knowledge. I mean, I know that after I've had several of these trips, I've changed my life afterwards, you know, like I've recognized certain things and I've actually put into action the knowledge that was imparted, you know, by these psychedelics. And I think that that's another thing is if you're not ready for that knowledge to actually use it, why would the plan appear to you if it knows that you're not going to put it into practice, you know?
Mm.
Right.
And that's kind of the way that my teacher explained it to me, because, you know, I've also always been a very big fan of psychedelics and mind altering substances. I have a psychology background. So to me, the mind and all of that is very, very, very much very interesting. But the way that he kind of shut me down and once he said that, I didn't even question it because it made so much sense was that, you know, he said, it's not that you're not ready to receive the plan. It's just that you're not ready to apply the aspects that it's going to awaken in you in an efficient way. And
wow, that's, you know, so like the timing that it comes about with, oh my God, you'll be amazed.
yeah. And like I said, I mean, I recently just connected with somebody. I didn't even bring up the you know, the ceremony. They were like, listen, you know, we're having a ceremony. It's out in Florida. It's February. You should come through. It would be great. And I, like I said, I didn't even know this person was into that stuff. I didn't even know.
What anything. Part of Florida? Come say hi.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, after this, I'll definitely give you details. And if you're down, we could definitely.
No, I'm wondering if it's the group of people that I know, actually.
Yeah, ayahuasca circles are all like network.
I bet it's.
I don't
want to
throw
people.
Out any names, but yeah, seriously.
There's not that many. To think it might be.
You know, you were talking about the mycelial network in our body, and I think the mycelial network outside of our body probably looks a lot the same because it's just
it
like
does. It does.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
I can imagine that.
I would love to actually expand on that because so
yeah, so hold on before we dive into that. So I just want to, because I don't want the audience to get lost in the check. So what we're about to go into is kind of a very, very important interpretation of, you know, a lot of these master teacher plants from specifically mushrooms. Am I correct?
For sure.
Yeah.
And so what we're about to dive into is a very, very kind of key teaching to how a lot of our ancestors viewed these sacred medicines. Just giving you guys a heads up so you know that we are transitioning away from the actual experience to speaking a little bit more about how these plants grew, how they've kind of become interwoven in society, etc.
For sure.
So go ahead, guys.
Yeah, Angela.
So I'll take the role. So I think it's really important people understand the history that we have with mushrooms. There's actually a lot of evidence to support that people in ancient Egypt were using mushrooms. When we look at the Ankh, which is considered the key to life, mirrors a mushroom exactly. Okay, so you have the cap, which is the female energy, and you have the stem, which is the masculine energy, and they're being married as a harmonious energy. You can actually look up, you know, there's hieroglyphic paintings and whatnot within the pyramids of people eating an Ankh, like, you know, it's like, what else could that mean, right? Really, like, I'm just gonna eat an Ankh for fun, you know? So mushrooms have been used for a long time, and a lot of people would agree that they are the original elders, right? That we descended from them. You know,
well, again, even in the biological sense, if you go even farther back, you know, fungus are the original eukaryotic cells. So when you look at, you know, all the aquatic plants that consisted of primordial life, the original animal cells are thought to have been hijacked. You know, when you hear about mitochondrial DNA being so much older than regular DNA, it's kind of referring to the fact that these bacteria entered cells in a way that allowed them to metabolize things differently. So right from the beginning, there were fungus that were directing.
Hello? I think she disconnected.
Oh, we lost her. Okay.
All right. She'll pop back in.
Okay.
Next. But I mean, if you just want to kind of So let's just, you know, take a brief kind of second. I wanted to touch on something that you said. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you were talking about ancient Egypt and the use, you know, of psychedelics. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not too versed in that in terms of, you know, I've heard that theory before. Haven't really dug too deep, but I mean, you know, it wouldn't be far to kind of think that perhaps, yeah, these, you know, these mind altering substances really could have been something that was used ceremoniously. Expanding.
They definitely were. I mean, you look at Osiris is actually, is it Osiris? I believe so. One of them is known to be associated with the mushroom, right? And
right.
And you know, you talk about, like, you know, the Egyptians always talked about, you know, harnessing death, right? They talk about death all the time. They're talking about a mushroom trip, you know, and yeah, because
could be, you know.
Yeah,
and I think that it's also important, you know, because I'm a big believer that. Oh, she's back. Perfect.
Hello.
You know, it's very important to see. There was a documentary that I was watching a couple months ago. I'm very much into, like, the National Geographic and stuff like that, and they were talking about how when mushrooms are introduced into the flora of the jungle floor, they create a network of communication, mm-hmm. that actually ends up enriching the soil. It mm-hmm. enriches the communication between other plants. So it's almost like they serve as kind of like an extension for other plants to be able to also communicate with each other, and ends up making the soil just that much richer because of their interconnections and the way that they communicate.
Exactly. And so when we take mushrooms, we're connecting into that network, into the ancient network of the earth, you know, that's been there for millions of years. So we're accessing that knowledge. And Osiris, it's funny that you mentioned that. Osiris is known as the bearer of the knowledge of the underworld. Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's the network right there, you know.
That's very interesting. That's a very interesting take on it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've heard of it, never really kind of dug too deeply into it. Mm-hmm. But I can definitely see that. I mean, you know, the ancient Egyptians, the original demonic societies, arguably the descendants of the original shamans.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And, you know, and so for them to kind of overlook these medicines, it wouldn't make sense.
Exactly.
I think if anything, they knew most importantly what these medicines could do. And I think, again, I think they held them in high reverence, you know. For example, and this is, again, just my opinion, I don't think that anybody, you know, who's too young should be taking these medications, or not these medications, these master plants, specifically just because, again, I think that there is a certain level of responsibility that must be met.
I don't think anyone thinks that, like, in the psychedelic community, really, like.
Oh, no, I know they don't. No, I know, like I said.
Like, I know, like, it's on the Dhamma traditions, like, it is practiced to give younger kids that, but there's also, like, not this, like, hard and fast, like, adults are adults when they're 18.
No, of course. And that's what I'm trying to leaning at is those communities that normally do that, they have kind of, you know, kind of cultural ways of being that allow for these, you know, people to be more ready for this plant at a younger age.
Well, it's part of it. Having the rite of passage is what makes those, you know, what we would consider children more adult than adults that we consider adults here. Like, we are truly missing a rite of passage.
Absolutely.
This type of activity is exactly what's supposed to define somebody as being an adult or not an adult. It's not supposed to be an 18th birthday that may or may not be ceremonious, may or may not be communal.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know? And you know, these people that do these things where they do have these rite of passages, it's not just one day they give it to them. These children or these, you know, younger people are prepared for this because, again, they approach it ritualistically. They see it as like this massive kind of responsibility that's gonna be given to them, and that's almost gonna be, like, allow them to transcend from whatever they, you know, were considered before. As you said, you know, there is no 18th, like, okay, you're 18, now is the time that you do it. No, it's kind of, you know, the rite of passage is how you know that you've transferred over into the being considered a woman or a man in these societies.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we as a society,
touching on something. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I think you were touching on something before you got disconnected earlier about, you were saying something regarding the mushrooms and the and like the connection to the outside world.
Oh, I'm so sorry I got disconnected. I was really on a roll there.
It's all good. It's all good. If yeah. you can't remember what it is, it's all good. But I know that it sounded like it was going to be something good. So I wanted to just give you an opportunity to kind of rehash it.
No, I would love to hear what Tangela has to say about like rite of passage, though, in medicine work.
Well, yeah, I think, well, especially when you look at Native cultures, which is interesting to note that Native Americans were actually banned from doing their ceremonies until the 1970s, you know, which is not that long ago.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
It's no wonder that, you know, we're so disconnected from these very ancient traditions, you know. So I think it's a big reflection on our world that we do see them being used in the wrong way. And because there is a need for it, you know, people need this, but they just don't know how to do it. And
it's really hard to tell people that they need something like this too. And I personally am not like brave enough to do it yet. Like I was thinking about what we were talking about with kids, because I was in a Starbucks trying to get a better connection. And there were like some young people sitting near me. And it was like, I was thinking about, oh, I probably shouldn't talk about psychedelics in front of them. And then I was like, you know, I'm overhearing their conversation. And I can hear in the way that they speak and the way that their thoughts bounce that like they've been trained by these pieces of entertainment that are meant to immediately grab your attention with emotion and conflict. Yep. And I just heard them parroting these problems of people that are older than them, but they're not imitating it. They're not being inauthentic. It's just, it's how they've learned how social interactions.
It's the program. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the social programming. I mean, it's all.
Yeah. And I'm like, Jesus, I'm afraid I'm going to influence them with 2 seconds of overhearing someone at Starbucks, and they have a whole lifetime of conditioning. Like, I'm pretty sure they'll be okay.
Right. And I think it's also interesting to see is, you know, for particularly in North America, a lot of these different tribes, you know, ranging from the Lakota to the Navajo to the Pequot, I mean, all across the board, they all had different belief systems. They all didn't live that far from each other. They all had different belief systems. But the one fundamental thing that they did have was specific rituals, the coming of age ritual, the ritual for the afterlife, the ritual for, you know, kind of like the hunting rituals. They had these rituals in there. And it was almost like it didn't matter what they were exposed to in the outside world, because they had that foundation initially.
Right.
That was this
they were
ritualistic
building that
approach.
Relationship from the beginning with Mother Earth.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Which is something that we've lost as a society, for sure. And absolutely. I think it's coming back now with like the rise of the divine feminine, you know?
Yeah.
I agree.
I totally agree with that.
I agree 100%. And it's good to see. It's good to see. It really is a great sight to see that there is this kind of risingness and this awareness between, you know, among people.
Mm-hmm. Tangela, I'm wondering like what medicines, like what plants you use to brew your medicine, because I'm curious if you use like an actual ayahuasca vine, and if not, do you still experience like a spirit of Mother Aya like when you go to the place you go to? I'm just curious.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, I've used different medicines throughout my practice. I have used Aya in like the traditional sense with the vine and the roots and whatnot. And then I've also done a lot of DMT. And I would love to expand on this, because I feel like DMT is here for a reason as well. And I think DMT is a big response to the modern age, because it is such a quick experience, right? And a lot of people like to knock on it because it's like, okay, well, it's not the same as having an IS trip, because, you know, it's not as long, you're not as involved in it, you know, but I do think it holds a big purpose. And most of what I've done has been with DMT, because, you know, my practice has been here in America, you know, so it's like to have, you know, to hold ceremony with somebody for that long. Yes, you can do it. But it's also really beneficial if you can do it in a quick way as well. And some people are not ready to go that deep, you know? So being able to do something within an hour or 2 hours is really, really helpful when you look at the way that our structure is built. Like, you know, yeah. Our society is all about instant gratification, and that's okay. You know, we people complain about that a lot, but it's like,
I mean, the Kali Yuga is a quick one, you know? Like,
what?
I said the pace of the Kali Yuga is a quick one. Like, it's like things are meant to develop quickly. So, like, the instant gratification is, like, necessary to facilitate that, like, right. Energy.
Right. Because, like, you look at monks, right? Like, people always talk about, like, okay, well, monks can achieve that psychedelic state within 40 years of meditation. So you don't need psychedelics. But it's like, really? We don't have time for people to meditate for 40 years before they get what's going on.
Be a monk for 40 years. You know, I have some other stuff planned here.
Right. It's like, I'm trying to get shit done. Like, you know, so again, I think there's just all this negative energy around psychedelics sometimes because people are like, oh, well, you can just meditate about it. And it's like, yes, you can. Well, but why not use something that can, you know, jumpstart that and give you, you know, it's a medicine, yeah, right?
Absolutely. And just a quick thing on that is, you know, I think that it's definitely good to use psychedelics as almost stepping stones.
Right.
I think the issue is when people stop using their own meditative practices, their right. own development, and just rely on the psychedelics mm-hmm. as the sole kind of spiritual development that right. they have.
Yo, you know,
I don't think
tool.
That that's beneficial either.
But
it's a tool at the end of the day.
But if I can just say, like, an expedient device that doesn't require any external input is the breath. It's always accessible. You can be as young as you want, and it's not controversial. Although, I did get in trouble when I was in high school for doing what was essentially holotropic breathwork. I literally got called in.
Oh, I think she's just gonna. Okay. But I think you know, it is a good point. And that's one of the things that you know, my teacher was very, very kind of adamant about. You know, he always said, you have to respect the master teachers. You have to respect yeah. mm-hmm. the process of them. He's like, but remember that they are just teachers. It is up to the student to match the material. It is up to the student to apply the material. And I think that a lot of the lessons that we get from these master teachers by a lot of people might not be immediately understood. I think yeah. the subconscious gets it quicker than the conscious does. Mm-hmm. And so meditating on those experiences and developing your experience further through meditation is definitely a more powerful route than right. just kind of, like I said in the beginning of the episode, you know, hey, I'm feeling down or I need some enlightenment. Let me go trip on mushrooms for this weekend and get this enlightenment, you know? I think that also goes in part of having reverence for the plan and understanding that it's not just whenever you want it. You know, it's respecting its lesson. It's respecting the time that the spirit takes to tap right. into you and explain these things.
Right.
But I think you guys were making great points in terms of the society that we live in. You know, it's hard for you to explain to people nowadays that plants have spirit, right? So, the you know what I'm saying? The
yeah.
people that study that practice being vegetarian or veganism, you know, at least they kind of understand that plants are alive. Right. And so it's a little bit easier with that crowd when you come in and you say, hey, listen, like, you have to cultivate the plant yourself so that the mm-hmm. spirit can accept you. Right. Or if it doesn't work, then the spirit rejected you. Those people might be more open than if you go to somebody who's not a vegetarian, who doesn't necessarily believe that plants have any type of consciousness, and you tell them that, they're going to look at you and be like, this guy's crazy. You know, this person over here telling me I got to talk to the plant to make it grow. I mean, listen, you look at studies, that helps plants grow. When you speak to plants, they grow better. You know?
It's true. People do that with marijuana. They do that with all sorts of plants. And
yeah, I do that all the time yeah. with marijuana. I mean, I literally sit there and as I'm like breaking up and rolling up, I'm singing its songs like from my culture.
Yes.
Like, you know, and it may seem weird to people. And I try not to do it out in public when I'm with friends. Because I understand they might think I'm doing some type of brujeria on it. And they'll be like, what's going on with this? But again, you know, the ancient shamans and the ancient practitioners of this ancient medicine, they treated it with reverence. They treated it with respect. And I think that that's one big point we, you know, everybody that's listening to this episode should take it, is you need to come at these things with a lot of respect, because whether or not you believe that there is a spirit in them, whether or not you believe that there is a connection to higher dimensions through them, this is a plant that's going to change your life. I mean, these are plants that are going to change your life, for better or for worse in some situations, but mostly, I mean, I've never seen somebody come out of a trip with shrooms, ayahuasca, or DMT, or even peyote, and really kind of go off the wall unless they weren't already mentally going there anyways.
Exactly. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've seen it on DMT. That, yeah. I mean, I've seen it on acid where people will abuse the chemical. You know, with acid, one of the things with me is it isn't necessarily naturally occurring. And because you do need to synthesize it to a certain degree, it matters who is the one making it. It matters what intention it was made for. It, you know, a lot of things matter. And so, in my opinion, out of all psychedelics, you know, acid could be the most dangerous one if abused, because of the fact that it does lack that connection, you know, to the spirit of what it is that you're tripping to, you know?
Right. I mean, you know, I don't know if I necessarily agree, because it does come from ergot. So it does actually, you know, have roots in it. And acid is actually one of my favorites. And
me too. Acid, me too. Don't get me wrong. I love it.
Yeah. But again, it's like you said, acid is definitely the one that gets the most bad rap because people do not know how to use it correctly. It's the most common party drug, you know?
Exactly.
People don't really use mushrooms and DMT to party, you know? So, you know, some do, but acid definitely is a party drug, right?
Yeah.
Which
because of that, it gets abused the most, in my opinion. You know?
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, it's, you know, I've used it in a party environment, but for me, every time I step into it, I'm like, okay, this is what's good. Like, it's the intention that is the most important thing, you know?
Absolutely.
A lot of my life, I've done a lot of festivals, you know, so acid has always been my go-to when I'm doing festivals, but it's because I dance, you know, and I'll do my fire performing, and it's like that, like, I take a couple of tabs of acid and I spin some fire and it tunes me in like nothing else. You know what I mean? Like, I connect with the spirit of the fire,
right?
Straight up. But it's because I'm using it with a purposeful intention, you know?
Right.
I'm not just like, okay, I'm going to take some acid and get fucked up, you know? No, I'm going to take acid to enhance who I am.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And even, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, you probably have a certain specific mental or emotional preparatory ritual before you take these plants. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't just hop in there and take the tab like a lot of people do.
Yes.
You know, I know for myself, I always set the intention and I always ask, I always direct my trip to one question because I feel that it provides better clarity if I just kind of leave it to one. Before I do it, you know, I say a little prayer. I like to clear the space, make sure that I'm clear in my environment, and then I'll take it. Not everybody does that, and not everybody has to follow that particular process. But again, there should be a ritualistic, you know, these are people who were wise beyond the years of people we have alive today. And if they did it with a ritualistic purpose, it's because they understood the importance of this reverence and these rituals, you know? But yeah, I mean, I'm not talking bad about acid at all. You know, I've had great experiences with it. I mean, again, I'm wary to recommend it to everybody just because, you know, I think that anybody who's going to do acid for the first time should do it with people that they feel comfortable with and that somebody who's experienced in the usage of it. Just because, you know, depending on the dosage and stuff like that, I know it can get pretty real for people the first time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be difficult for people to kind of get themselves out of when the trip starts going a little bit down. You know, it could be hard for people to kind of get themselves out of that. So my recommendation, personally, would be, you know, definitely do it with a friend who's kind of experienced in it that can guide you. You know, just because it helps to be able to ground yourself in reality at times during these trips.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, even with Aya, you know, you have a guide. You're not doing it by yourself, you know.
Right.
You know, same thing. You know, mushrooms you could probably get away with by yourself, but even then, when you're getting into the higher doses, you don't want to be you know.
When I did that heroic dose, and it was actually over the summer, I think it was I think it was end of July that I did this kind of like higher thing. And I mean, I'm telling you, I was lucky that I've been with a friend who had done it. I think he did it twice before. And so when he saw, because in my mind, like I was screaming, right? In my mind, I was screaming, I was yelling. But then, you know, when I finished the script, he told me, he was like, dude, you sounded like you were choking on your tongue. Like you were just like this gargling sound. And I was like, what? Like, again, your experience that you're experiencing in your mind is so different from what's actually happening that it's very hard for you to sometimes ground yourself if somebody isn't there, like you said, at those higher dosages. You know, when the lower dosage, you can get away with it because you can just kind of be like, nah, I'm tripping. But when you when your whole reality is changing in front of your eyes, it's hard for you to be like, nah, this is just a trip, you know, if you're not experienced enough.
Yeah, exactly. That's where there's the distinction. It's like, for someone like me, you know, at this point in my life, I actually prefer to trip by myself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because for me, it's just, you know, I feel like I'm a big channeler, you know? So when I trip with other people, I'm dealing with all their energy too. And I end up being the babysitter always, you know? Absolutely. So for me, it's like, I can do that. Yeah. I don't mind babysitting. You know, I feel like that is my call to duty, but for me, tripping by myself is very important as well, to be able to harness that energy. And again, it's just like meditation. It's a very sacred practice, you know? So the deeper your relationship goes, you know, I mean, I've experimented a lot with mystical doses, which is 20 to 30 grams, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, heroic dose is around like 5, you know,
right,
around that range. So obviously it's a little bit different.
Of course.
And you die, you know, it's like, it's kind of similar to DMT where you like fall into a trance and you're just gone, you know?
Yep.
The mystical dose is very similar, but it's like, you know, almost similar to ayahuasca because you're just like in this completely different dimension. It's known as a portal, you know, and it's known to be the keys to life, because you're literally like just sitting there with all these how the fuck do you say that word?
Hieroglyphs.
There you go. That, you know, like I would go into that space and just see all of these messages around me and just see like all of these crazy ass ancestors around me, and I'm like, okay, like,
yeah, it's definitely not something to play with. And I just wanted to touch real quick, you know, because we'll wrap up after this, but I definitely wanted to touch on what you were saying. You know, when I started with LSD, I started with groups, and now I find myself wanting to do it alone, because again, I agree with you 100% that when you're with somebody else, it's like you don't know whether you're channeling their energy, whether you're channeling your energy, or you're channeling actual energy of the plant or the drug. But when I'm not tied to anything, it's guiding me. I can do whatever I need to do that I feel I need to do in order to feel what is, you know, the answers that are coming through me. And so I definitely agree. You know, I'm a huge champion for psychedelics, for people to use it. I think that it's going to be something that once you can see it in kind of the modern day, you know, kind of psychiatric processes, they're starting to speak about how, well, this
it's
can cure depression.
Back.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that always worries me. You know, I hate to be kind of a negative Nancy in that, but it always worries me when mainstream wants to take something like sacred plants and introduce it, because I feel like there's always going to be a cat control of. I feel like the system always comes with a catch, but you know, I could be wrong. They could be using it, you know, purely. I hope so, because I think it's going to help a lot of people. I think that once this stigma is released, it's going to be something that we're going to be seeing as a lot more normal, especially kind of in our later years. I think maybe 20 to 30 years from now, we're going to see this as something very, very kind of mainstream and acceptable. You know, maybe not in the ritualistic aspect that we speak it of, but I think that's why it's important for us to speak on those kind of traditions, so that people who do feel called to do these medicines ritualistically are aware that that's kind of the way that the ancients did it, and they did so for a reason, you know?
Yeah, it's very important knowledge, because I mean, obviously in a modern world it's going to evolve into something else, but again, there's no reason why it can't evolve with the ancient knowledge, and it should.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. I mean, all right, Tangela, listen, I was going to wait to see if Jade came back, but
yeah.
I think the connection is gone. You know, I really appreciate you and her coming on here, speaking your knowledge. I mean, I learned a lot myself. I'm sure the listeners learned a ton.
Yay. You know,
absolutely. And I'm really grateful that you guys were so open on sharing your experiences and stuff like that. Obviously, I'm going to open up, you know, my DMs for questions. You know, regarding these ancient medicines, regarding this episode, anything that they send my way, you know, directed to you or Jabe, I'll send that out to you guys. And then, you know, if you guys wouldn't mind kind of responding, you know, then we could maybe have something or like a live where we hop on and maybe touch on those.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're open as well. It's TAN, as in Nancy, JILA. If you guys want to follow me, and I
perfect. And is that on Instagram or on Twitter?
It's both. It's the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Mm-hmm. And then let me just get, because I know that Jabe had one. So Jabe's at on Twitter is actually at FLUXXY official. Again, it's at FLUXXY official. I know these young ladies would not mind you guys following them. You know, asking them any questions. Obviously, as you can tell from what they just spoke on, they both know what they're talking about. You know, it's a blessing to be able to kind of be a conduit for that knowledge to be spread. So guys, again, thank you so much for tuning in. This was episode 21. I have a couple of other episodes that I'm going to be unveiling. I have some people lined up for some more discussions. Tangela, this is definitely not the last time that I'm going to want to bring you on here. I know that you and I, you know, we share a lot of conversation and a lot of discussion on Twitter. And I think a lot of these discussions would be cool to be had, you know, over this podcast. That way we can get a little bit more interaction from maybe the audience and stuff like that.
For sure. Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, guys. So again, thank you for tuning in. This was episode 21 of Essential Radio. If you guys have any questions, you have me on Instagram. You have me on Twitter at the Jaguar Shaman. Just shoot me a DM. If you have any suggestions or any feedback about the episodes, again, guys, I'm open to hearing all kinds of stuff. You know, like I said, from the very beginning about this podcast to where it is now, I do this to kind of hear what you guys want to hear, as well as, you know, to be able to share a lot of these shamanistic principles and this ancient knowledge that I think that is very important for everybody to kind of at least remember, if not put to practice. So family, love you guys. Thank you so much for the support. I'll catch you next time on the next episode. Appreciate you.